fellow Texans, I am proudly standing here to humbly see. I assure you, and I mean it, now who says I don't speak out as plain as day? And fellow Texans, I'm for progress and the flag. Long may it fly. I'm a poor boy, come to greatness. So it follows that I cannot tell a lie.
What the hell did he say?
Same as usual, not a damn thing.
Ooh, I love to dance a little sidestep. Now they see me, now they don't. I've come and gone. And ooh, I love to sweep around the white step. Cut a little swath and leave the people alone.
Governor, do you plan to take action against the chicken ranch?
Now, my good friends, it behooves me to be solemn and declare I'm for goodness and for profit and for living clean and sane daily prayer. And now, my good friends, you can sleep nights. I'll continue to stand tall. You can trust me, for I promise I shall keep a watchful eye upon you.
Did you get any of that?
I hear him talking, but he don't come in.
Ooh, I love to dance a little sidestep. Now they see me, now they don't have come and gone. Sweep around the white step, cut a little swath and leave the people alone.
There he is. Come on, boys.
Governor, mail to the people. Watch your news.
Why has the chicken ranch operation been so long ignored?
We seem to be having some acoustic problems in here.
Aren't you afraid of possible payoffs and bribes?
Nothing. I'm sorry.
Enough of this pussyfooting, Governor. What do you intend to do about Miss Mona and the chicken ranch?
Now, Miss Mona, I don't know her, though I've heard the name, oh yes. But of course I've no close contact. So what she's doing, I can only guess. And now, Miss Mona, she's a blemish on the face of that good town. I am taking certain steps here. Someone somewhere's gonna have to close her down.
Can you believe that, man?
Is that a yes or no?
It's a possible maybe.
Ooh, I love to dance a little sidestep. Now they see me, now they don't. I've come and gone. Ooh, I love to sweep around the white step. Cut a little swath and leave the people alone. Ooh, I love to dance a little sidestep. I love to sweep around the white step. Not a little swath and lead the people on.
Yeah. Charles Durning in The Best Little Whorehouse from Texas, in Texas. A wonderful film, a wonderful performance, and setting the stage for our conversation today, in which political duplicity is going to be the main focus, and we're going to get to that at the break at the bottom of the hour, when my special guest, former Michigan State Senator Patrick Kolbeck, is going to join me, and we're going to talk about election fraud and the disturbing tendency of even a lot of Republican office holders, and I say it's disturbing for the Republicans in particular because they're the ones whose ox was gored here, or at least their party's ox was the one gored here in the 2020 election in November. And so forth. So I'm Pete Hendrickson. I'm delighted that you're here with me, and I think we're going to have a very good show. Before we get to Mr. Colbeck and his fascinating contribution to our conversation today, I want to touch on a couple of other items that I find quite interesting. And I hope you will too. First one being the ruling by a court in Lisbon, Portugal, recently, last week actually, that compelled by a petition from citizens, this court did an analysis of the evidence and presumably held hearings and let both sides present their cases, and ended up ruling that only 0.9% of the purported verified cases of COVID-19 in Portugal actually died of COVID-19, with his final figure being a fatality total for the country of 152, as compared to the 17,000 deaths claimed by the government over the course of the last year and a half. This is a fascinating outcome, not surprising, frankly, to those of us that have paid attention to the data. In fact, those who have paid attention to the data know that even the CDC in America here has acknowledged that only 6% of the people included in the purported death totals from C19, COVID-19, actually died just of COVID-19. All the rest, the other 97% or 94%, sorry, all had an average of 2.6 additional comorbidities or other causes of death in their in their cases, in their stories. So only 6% actually died of COVID-19. The other 94% died with COVID-19. That is to say, it has alleged that this other 94% of the whatever it is now 600,000 or so purported cases of COVID-19 fatalities, 94% of those actually had and apparently died of heart disease, chronic respiratory distress, pneumonia, any number of other things that normally kill these people. And this is one of the reasons why the death rates for COVID-19 are widely known to be oriented far more than otherwise to the elderly and frail, the elderly and sickly, in fact, in particular. And so this court in Lisbon has basically confirmed the same thing that the CDC has quietly acknowledged here in the U.S., same thing that the public health director of Italy reported way back when. Some of you will remember back in March of last year when Italy had become kind of a hotbed of COVID-19 activity and purported fatalities. And it was the experience in Italy, the numbers coming out of Italy were used as one of the sticks with which to flog everyone into accepting the lockdowns and so forth. It was those reported figures that led to people imagining enormous fatality rates and so forth. But the director of public health in Italy, good ways through the course of this hysteria associated with what was going on there, acknowledged stated outright that that only a tiny percentage of the people that were being having COVID-19 ascribed as cause of death actually died of COVID-19. The vast majority, greater than even 94%, according to this Italian public health director, had died of other things. And they were simply having COVID-19 ascribed to them as having perhaps been in their system, and that all that being based on vague diagnostic information, a symptom catalog that changed fairly often and that mimicked many other common diseases. Eventually, we got around to using bad PCR tests that were overcycled to the point where they were the results were completely useless and they delivered false positives on a regular basis, and so forth. So, fascinating ruling by the Lisbon court, contributing substantially to the body of knowledge or the perspective that we all need on this subject. And in that regard, one last point on this issue. I want to direct everyone. We had a similar study in more detail than the CDC's 6% admission. Dr. Genevieve Briand of Johns Hopkins did an elaborate, an in-depth analysis of the causes of death in the U.S. during the course of 2020, and determined that the deaths ascribed to COVID-19 actually were replacements for deaths that were dropped out of the picture for other typical causes of death, such as heart disease and pneumonia, flu, et cetera. Her study makes clear to any eye that cares to read through it that the death rate from COVID-19 is minimal at worst and far, far less than what has been used to maintain this a sense of hysteria and promote the taking of vaccines and so forth. I have an analysis of that, of Dr. Briand's work posted on my website. And I want to give everyone the URL to this. If you have a pencil, write this down. LostHorizons.com/N/127.htm number sign 2 and the numeral 2. So that's again LostHorizons.com/N/127.htm number 2. And at that spot you'll find an analysis of Brianne's research on this very important topic. Making clear that, again, as the Lisbon court has just pointed out and as the Italian health minister said and as the CDC has quietly admitted, we have been being threatened with a hobgoblin. We've been being made to panic and allow an enormous expansion of government exercise of power over us. Completely lawless expansion, completely contrary to the constitutional limitations, completely beneficial to a lot of very well-connected interests, and the amount of ruinous harm that has been done and is continuing to be done is unimaginable. It's important that everyone understand this information. Please go to that site. And read that document. I think you'll find it absolutely fascinating. Okay, moving on to another subject. This is another item in the news recently that I find fascinating and positive in its way, and that is the story of a fellow who characterizes himself or is characterized in the press as an influencer on TikTok. That being somebody who apparently has a lot of followers because he posts things people find interesting and is believed to influence the commercial decisions, the buying decisions, so forth, of those followers and therefore apparently gets paid by manufacturers, by businesses to hold up a can of Pepsi or whatever while he's doing his videos. Anyway, this fellow is he's fascinating to me because he is a trans person, but he is not a typical trans person. This is the first that I know of who is a transracial person. This is a British-born a Caucasian fellow named Ollie London, and he has decided that he's really a Korean. Like the transgender folks who decide that while they are men, they really are women. They really ought to be women. They're men born in the wrong or women born in the wrong bodies, that sort of thing, or the other way around. Men born in the wrong bodies and really they ought to be women. And really ought to be men, even though they're born in women's bodies. This fellow has decided that he's actually a Korean and was born in the wrong body. He is a Korean. He identifies as a Korean now, and he has now had the surgery to make him look like a Korean. And he has declared that this is his identity. He's now a Korean man. And the couple fascinating things about this: one, the reaction of the transgender community, which apparently is strongly against and rejecting of this proposition that Ollie London can trans to a different race. Hard to imagine what the reasoning is for that opposition. If someone can trans to a different gender, a far more exclusive aspect of an individual than a race is, why not the trans to a different race? Obviously, the problem is that this move by Ollie London underscores the absurdity of the proposition of transgenderism. It is no more legitimate to imagine that by changing one's features surgically or in any other way, by virtue of how we dress or cut our hair or whatever, it is possible to be a different gender than what one really is. Ollie London is just taking the next step. And thereby underscoring the absurdity of the argument that that trans anything is possible, rational, or to be shown any respect. The next thing will be someone deciding that they're a dolphin and born as a dolphin and they get the surgery and I don't know, flop around in a fish tank for a while. Obviously, they don't become a dolphin, although. I don't know. I could make a snide remark about the what it says about their humanity that anyone would want to do such a thing. But I, perhaps could say the similar things about the other inclinations to deny one's actual self, one the reality of what one is, and try and pretend that one is something else or could be or could become something else. Ridiculous and absurd, and so hats off to Ollie London for pointing this out in so dramatic a fashion. As I said, this guy has had the surgery. He now has Oriental eyes and he had his nose redone. I didn't even realize that was a characteristic that was particular to the Asian race, but apparently it is, or he felt that it was anyway, and so he really does look Korean now. Maybe not quite hasn't quite gotten the exact shade of skin down, the exact coloring, but at any first and second glance, the fellow looks very Korean. So, again, congratulations to Ollie London, and thank you for giving us this. One last thing. We're going to go to the break in a few moments, and my guest Patrick Kolbeck should be joining me at that point, and we're going to switch gears and talk about election stuff. But I have one other item that I want to touch on real quickly that is actually related to that subject, and that is the revelation by reporting journalistic research by Revolver News of the presence of lots of FBI informants in the ranks of the people who appeared at the Capitol on January 6th, and the very obvious implication that these FBI agents did what they always do when they infiltrate groups, and that is to prompt bad behavior of some sort on the part of these groups, to plan it, to lead it, to encourage it, and to basically be responsible for it. The news has been met with shock and rejection by everyone trying to make the January 6th thing into this seminal insurrection event, worst thing to happen since the Civil War kind of nonsense that we've all heard lots about. But this is a situation, the evidence is very strong, the argument, the reasoning behind it is very strong. It's not going to go away unless, none of us talk about it. And so I want people to talk about it. I want to encourage everyone to talk about it, pay attention to it. Revolver News, again, the place that did the initial reporting, Tucker Carlson followed up with some reporting on the subject as well. And Glenn Greenwald has written a great column about it. Those who follow Glenn, and I encourage everyone to do so. He's one of the best journalists in the business today. Go to Substack, and you can find his posts and read about this article on this subject is titled "Questions About the FBI's Role in 1/6 Are Mocked Because the FBI Shapes Liberal Corporate Media." Excellent article. Here comes the break. We will be back on the other side with Patrick Kolbeck.
This is Catherine at the Power Hour. The Power Mall began when Joyce Riley discovered an all-natural soap that heals skin issues and can replace your bathing, laundry, and household cleaning products. That soap is Miracle 2 and is made from natural minerals and coconut extract with no added fragrances or colors and is naturally concentrated and biodegradable. I guarantee after you discover how amazing Miracle 2 products are, you'll recommend them to everyone you know. To order, call 877-817-9829 or visit thepowermall.com today. You'll learn why so many people say, it's not just soap, it's a miracle.
Boost your immune system naturally this year with oil of oregano, a potent germ killer. This is the true wild oregano oil P73, a blend of edible spices of wild oregano grown on natural mineral-rich soils. Research published in the International Journal of Food Microbiology found that oil of oregano is an excellent germicide capable of killing a wide range of fungi and bacteria. Get it today by visiting thepowermall.com or calling 877-817-9829.
We've all heard about antibiotics, but what about probiotics? Antibiotic means against life. Probiotic means pro-life. Antibiotics kill bacteria that are infectious and harmful to the body. They also kill the good bacteria, though, that are necessary for good health. Probiotics from Living Streams replaces the healthy balance of friendly bacteria and normalizes the digestive tract. Gastritis, ulcers, diarrheal disease is just a few of the problems people develop when the intestinal flora is out of balance. Living Streams probiotics create the healthy balance needed for good digestion, suppresses growth of pathogenic bacteria, and actually increases resistance to infection. Call the Power Hour, 877-817-9829. Order your Living Stream probiotics today. They're available in 2, 4, and 8-ounce bottles, and Living Streams probiotics comes with a money-back guarantee. Get your body back in balance with Living Streams probiotics today. 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Living Streams Probiotics. Everyone should be pro-life.
I don't know where to start. There's so many products you guys offer. I think one of the first things I ever ordered from you guys was your clay. The clay is miraculous. I could not do without that. And the charcoal, You know, you can get yourself in a bathtub to kind of help take the toxins out. So just those two alone, but I could go on to the Optavita Silver Lozenges. Of course, then the Oregaresp and the P73, the oil of oregano, and your Vitamir toothpaste. Again, I could go on and on and on.
Call Jay at thepowermall.com and receive superior customer service. Call 1-877-817-9829 right now. That number again is 1-877-817-9829. Support small businesses and buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com. Hi, this is Jay at the Power Mall. I thought I would discuss an item that's very valuable to my personal health and well-being. That product is called Curcumin X4000. Its potent antioxidant properties have been shown to decrease swelling and allow us to enjoy our golden years. Take control over your health today, guys. Order Curcumin by calling 877-817-9829 or order at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com. Hi, this is Power Hour J. We've been spring cleaning at the Power Mall. We have an overstock of Grown by Nature supplements, and we'd like to offer you 25% off of select products. Hurry, the sale will only be available while supplies last. No code necessary to shop at thepowermall.com, or you can call Jay at 877-817-9829. That's thepowermall.com or 877-817-9829.
Okay, we're back. We're gonna start having that conversation with former Michigan State Senator Patrick Kolbeck in one moment. I want to take a second before that to reiterate the PowerMall.com pitch there. People and excellent products, and your support for the Power Mall helps support this show and keep it on the air. And so I urge everyone to do some business with the Power Mall if you are needing any of the sorts of wonderful things that are carried there. That said, my special guest today is former Michigan State Senator Patrick Kolbeck. He is he's an excellent fellow who has who served two terms as state senator for Michigan's 7th District, and was a candidate for a governor of Michigan in 2018. That didn't work out, much to Michigan's regret, and to my regret, because we would be a whole lot better off if Pat Kolbeck had ended up in the Manoogian Mansion instead of the current occupant. He is a University of Michigan grad with a master's degree in aerospace engineering, and was involved substantially in the Michigan Right to Work effort that made Michigan a right to work state. And he's also an author with a book in print called Wrestling Gators, An Outsider's Guide to Draining the Swamp. And we'll talk about that book a little bit as we get into things here. But primarily what we're interested in talking about is the election fraud issue, the November 2020 election fraud, in which, to my way of thinking, primarily absentee voter ballots were manipulated in order to accomplish an improper outcome. Or the appearance of an improper outcome in the election. This manipulation took place in essentially five different key locations in swing states, among them Michigan and particularly Detroit. The effort to undo or at least expose the fraud that took place is ongoing. A lot of folks are involved in Arizona. As everyone knows, there is a forensic audit going on in which ballots are being recounted in Maricopa County. There's one of the same, an effort of the same sort due to begin in Fulton County in Georgia soon. last week a batch of some 7,000 or so petitions, or maybe it was the week before, were delivered to the Michigan legislature urging Michigan to begin the same process. And almost immediately after that that delivery and the rally that accompanied it at the state capitol took place, a little committee of three Michigan state senators that had been set up months earlier to look at the evidence of election issues, election irregularities, as some folks like to call it, and to make a report based on their findings as to what may have happened. And that report was released a day or so after the delivery of these petitions by many, many irate and activated Michigan citizens urging the Michigan legislature to do its job and examine this issue. There's a ton of evidence that at least a lot of improper things happened in the 2020 election in Michigan, and yet no meaningful investigation has been made. The Secretary of State, Jocelyn Benson, who is in charge of elections in the state, made some noises about investigating and claims to have done an audit, but actually only looked at a few thousand selected ballots in selected locations around the state, like one or two from each district. That was a complete whitewash farce. And this committee, the Senate committee, has issued a little whitewash affair of its own. And that's one of the key focuses that I want to get onto today, is the duplicity of even Republican officeholders in these various states that are kind of digging in their heels and trying to short-circuit these efforts to examine, explore, analyze, expose issues with these elections. Patrick Kolbeck has just done an analysis himself of that Senate report, which basically said, we couldn't find anything. Although it was rather weaselly worded about the subject it used at this time, and did a few other things to make clear that it was trying to avoid making really hard and fast statements to which it could be held to account later. But anyway, so with all that said, I want to welcome Patrick Kolbeck to the show. Patrick, you there?
Yes, I am. How you doing?
All right, outstanding. If I did a poor job summarizing any of what I was talking about there, please jump in and correct me. But otherwise, tell us what you found in your analysis of the Senate report and what they should have said, and as opposed to what they did say.
Well, the Senate report, it doesn't seem like they've been looking at the same data we have. So while I think they went through the motions of hearing testimony, I don't think they applied any critical thinking or logic or substantive reasoning to their conclusions on the report.
Right.
And by the way, I encourage everybody to go off and read their report and read my assessment of their report. You can do that by just going to my website at letsfixstuff.org. All the stuff that we're talking about, I hate he said, she said journalism. So I actually try to go out of my way to provide people with the source data so that they can make their own evaluations. Of course, I'm going to offer my assessment, and I'm going to let people know based on my experience as a state senator, based on my experience as a legislator and an engineer, and based on my experience as a poll challenger who actually witnessed what was happening at a TCS center out in Detroit. Look at what I've put together, and you'll know why I'm so passionate about this topic, because I actually saw the election fraud happening before my very eyes. It was done brazenly, openly, without repercussion, and it's being covered up right now by folks in the Michigan Senate with R's next to their name, as well as via threats from people with D's next to their name. This is,
yes,
this is very serious stuff right now. And if we want our constitutional republic, we better wake up and expose and shine the light on what these guys are trying to do. It was more of a coup than it was an election this last election.
I think a coup is exactly the right word, and I think I will second you in the strongest possible terms that this is the most serious thing that anyone could be paying attention to right now. It is as serious as a heart attack. It is a dire threat. In fact, it's worse than a dire threat. It is the fatal wound has been struck. It's just a question of will we take what little time is left to try and recover from this. Kudos to you for the open and transparency, openness and transparency of your presentation. That's exactly the way proper journalism is done, and proper debate as well. I personally, on this past Saturday, I read through 331 pages of affidavits from people who were poll watchers in Michigan, yeah, who observed the same sorts of things that you're talking about. And
you just disqualified yourself for serving on the Michigan Senate Oversight Committee.
Yes, I probably did. I've seen the evidence. I actually saw it. I saw it reported that Michigan senators and other legislators were under instructions to not look at material of the kind that you and I are talking about right now, because once they do, they can no longer say, I've not seen any evidence to that effect.
Yeah.
And so you're absolutely right.
Okay.
So go ahead then, Patrick, please.
Well, you were out in Antrim County with us, and so I'll start with that, because first I want to kind of break out what I've been talking about that's received so much pushback from folks like Senator McBroom, Senator Tice, and Senator Bison. I went through and I've done what you did. I read through all the affidavits. Essentially, I classify myself as an evidence aggregator. I submitted a couple of the affidavits myself, but the majority of what I'm sharing is testimony provided by other people that, I don't have the resources to go off and subpoena for data. I don't have the resources to go all Columbo on them. It's bad enough that I'm putting a pause button on my professional life to go off and get to the bottom of this. But I've done the best I can with the information presented, and I categorize all the fraud into four basic categories that I witnessed. Number one, chain of custody violations. Number two, statutory violations, i.e. violations of the law. Number three, constitutional violations, i.e. violations of our civil rights. And number four, the topic most people don't like to talk about, but it doesn't take much of a rocket scientist to look around and see that there's a significant influence operation that is being perpetrated on the citizens of America.
Yes.
And that takes its form. It's you can see it evident in the people getting pushed off of Twitter and YouTube and all the censorship that's happening on big tech. But you don't see this, but it's happening in the newsrooms all across America, is the censorship that's happening on stations like Fox News or in our newspapers. And it's not just the censorship, it's the outright bias. You can't say the word election fraud in any story anywhere unless you say the word unsubstantiated in front of it. That's kind of like the par for the course for all of our media types. And that's sad. And that's an indication of influence ops. And when I talk about this being a coup, what's the first thing you do in a coup? You take over the media. You take over the
TV
and radio stations, and you make sure that there's only one narrative being pushed out to everybody. Well, that's exactly what's happening right now. So those are the four basic categories. And it's usually, I like to start with an understanding of what is the chain of custody and why is it important when it comes to elections. And I like to start off by highlighting that the term chain of custody, many people have probably heard about it in context of criminal investigations. They know that if prosecutor can't demonstrate that he's maintained chain of custody around a key piece of evidence in the trial, then the judge is likely to throw out that court case. Well, in an election, it's the same thing. If you can't maintain the chain of custody around key election records, you should be throwing out the certification of that election. And frankly, that's what the duty of this, of the Board of Canvassers is, either county level or state Board of Canvassers, is that when they certify an election, they are certifying that all the procedures have been completed in accordance with the way that they're specified. That is essentially an audit. That's
right.
Another word for an audit. So canvas equals audit. Well, in the chain of custody for an election, there are four key election records that you need to demonstrate a chain of custody for. The first one is the qualified voter file. That's a statewide voter database maintained by the Michigan Secretary of State, in our case, of all the people who are eligible to vote in our state. Number two is the poll book. And poll books are essentially precinct-specific extracts of the qualified voter file. So if you got garbage coming into the poll books from the qualified voter file, you got garbage coming out. So you got to maintain that, you got to maintain the integrity of all these artifacts, every single one of them. So the poll book is very important because it's what poll workers at the precincts use to determine who gets a ballot or who gets to cast a vote. And this is important because once it gets past the poll worker, they're the gateway, they're the firewall that protects the integrity of ballots that go into the ballot bins that are eventually counted and tallied and lead to the last chain of custody record, which is a vote tally. So there's four key links in the chain of custody. You got the qualified voter file, the poll book, the ballots, and the vote tallies. And each one of those were broken in this 2020 election. Now, if any one of those links were broken, that would be ground for the decertification election. But in 2020, every single one of those links was broken. Start with the QVF. QVF had over 616,000 voters in there that should not have been in the qualified voter file.
Because they did of not, being dead or having moved out of the state or...
Well, this is just from a voting age population analysis based on a 2010 demographics analysis and census. So this is just stating that. Now, you might say, okay, maybe some new people have moved in different demographics. Okay, I'll give you that. Not 616,000. What it is, this is
In fact, Michigan has actually lost population during the period in question. So I actually would contend that you can't even throw that bone out there.
Yeah, I know we lost population in the prior decade. I think we actually gained population, just not as fast as everybody else. And
we're losing a congressional seat.
I know. That just means we're not keeping up with the Joneses.
Yeah.
I mean, they're all going to Texas and Florida, you know, where they
That's right. Yeah, exactly. Anyway, I'm sorry to interrupt. Go ahead. Keep going.
And so I'm just sensitive on that subject because of my work on Right to Work. I mean, one of the big reasons we passed it was because everybody was going to other states. And
And
we actually literally lost population then. So now we're gaining it. It's not as fast. But anyway, the other guys are way outpacing us. Let's just put it that way. But it's pathetic. So the idea that we have a slush fund for these folks who want to perpetrate election fraud of over 616,000 Mickey Mouse, Donald Duck, Elvis Presley names sitting in the qualified voter file. And I'm just being facetious with those names, but you get the idea. They're not real people that they can go off and allocate to ballots. That's a serious concern.
It is. It's a vulnerability of enormous proportion. In fact, it's a vulnerability of four times the proportion by which Joe Biden supposedly won the state of Michigan, 154,000 votes.
Yeah. Thank you for mentioning that, because that's exactly why I highlight that number, because a lot of people say, okay, maybe there was a little bit of fraud, but it's not enough to go off and overturn the election results. I go, really? And what detailed study have you presented to go off and affirm that the fraud was there, but just not significant enough to overturn the election results? Really?
Right. Exactly.
Let's go off and see the numbers. Crank the numbers. I want to see it. So anyway, if that data gets into the poll books, now you're in trouble. And by the way, especially when you get into communities like Detroit, they've got a habit of not verifying the identity of the person who submits the vote.
Well, in fact, they did not in particular this time around.
Yeah, we have affidavits that they weren't checking signatures. They were instructed not to check.
They were instructed not to. That's exactly right.
And the Secretary of State of Michigan actually got busted by Judge Chris Murray in a court case. Of course, well after the, you know, this is out in the March time frame when they're in mea culpa land, when it had no impact directly on the election results because they had already certified the votes. He came back and slapped the wrist of the Michigan Secretary of State and said, hey, you know, you violated the Administrative Procedures Act when you said don't worry about when she changed the standard for signature verification to presumed signature validation in this last election.
Right.
And so that's our primary mechanism for determining the identity of a voter in when it comes to mail-in ballots. And you know, with this COVID craziness, there was a big push to just make sure everybody started voting absentee. And yeah, it's kind of a designed perfect storm, if you will.
Yes,
increase the number of people mailing absentee and then decrease the verification checklist and the integrity of the checks against those mail-in ballots, and that's exactly what happened in this last election.
Yes.
And so all kinds of craziness happened from that. We have 1,060 votes in Antrim County that were cast, but they have no record that anybody actually voted in the QVF in Antrim County, and 15,962 people voted on it. You extrapolate that vote tally from one small county of 22,000 people like Antrim County to all 83 counties across the state and their relative populations, like my home county of Wayne County, you've got a point of concern.
A lot of votes. A lot of unreliable votes and perhaps even outright demonstrably false votes.
Well north of the 154,188 that we're talking about.
Sure.
So that's why people are concerned about it. That's why the work that's being done in Antrim County was landmark. It was a hats off to Bill Bailey as a plaintiff in that, and Matt DiPerno, his attorney. They
Absolutely.
Did an exceptional job digging beyond the obvious questions into what possibly could have happened to subject fraud. And they found a lot of details that should open up a lot of eyeballs. And you notice every single time they put out one of their findings, they are immediately silenced or given the silent treatment from the media. Nobody wants to talk about what they discovered in that Antrim County case. Nobody wants to discover the fact that they had a 4G wireless modem embedded on the motherboard of an ESNS machine that they discovered in another county as a result of their investigations. That's for all the people that say these machines were not connected to the internet because they didn't see anybody plugging in an Ethernet cable or an external USB-based cellular-based modem. Well, they didn't have to do that because they had it embedded in the motherboard.
Right.
And that should send chills up everybody's spine. And so, you know, poll books were compromised. Once you get past that poll book, you know, most people don't realize this, but, you know, once it comes out of the poll worker's hands, they tear off the stub that connects the ballot with its votes cast on it and the identifier of the ballot number that tracks it back to the voter. So in other words, once it gets past that poll worker, all you have is a pure ballot with the votes. You have no way of tracing that to what voter put it in or not, which is
right.
A good thing because we want our votes to be anonymous, right? We don't want the union to go back and check and say, hey, Brother Colbeck, did you vote the way we told you to go off and vote? My records, my analysis shows that you didn't. We don't want any of those stories happening here. It's called card check.
And that type of election, and for that specific reason, I agree that the anonymity is a really, really important thing. And it is generally anyway, but to be perfectly frank, I would happily forego the privacy of the vote as a remedy for an unreliable vote, if it came down to it on a general election basis.
I'll just warn you, in today's cancel culture, how dangerous that could be.
That absolutely would be dangerous. I agree 100%. At the same time, I think that the danger of a stolen election that puts into power a cabal that intends to ensure that it retains power from this point into the distant future is more of a threat.
I would submit they'd steal it in another way via intimidation. And that's
perhaps,
what's happening. That's
perhaps.
What's happening right now with our legislators.
I think that's happening broadly anyway, because the problems that are arising from all this are going unremarked, undenounced.
Yeah.
For the most part by most people. And it is a matter of intimidation. We had, you know, rioting, burning buildings down in our cities over the
right.
course of the summer as an intimidation effort.
When we protest, we sing God Bless America on the Capitol steps. When they protest, they throw firebombs.
Yeah, yeah. So
all these links in the chain of custody were busted, and which leads to fraudulent vote tallies. And we've already demonstrated with some of the affidavits, notably provided by Russell Ramslin, that demonstrated that there's at least 289,000 votes that are bogus. They couldn't have tabulated that many votes across the four counties that he looked at within that time frame. They just don't have the capacity, yet they dumped it in there. When you combine that with noting that these election management systems like Dominion, Hart, and ESNS have these abilities to go off and change the vote tallies or change the vote results by just a drag and drop of a mouse button, you start going, what the heck are we doing this for? Wake up, America. This is something seriously wrong.
Yeah.
So
it raises substantial questions. So I'm not a big fan of a lot of focus on the voting machine issue, although I think that the explanations given for the adjudication process that is used with these machines is very concerning. I'm not personally of the mind that China was reaching out and hacking the system and changing votes and things like that. But I do think that the vote changing was being done by somebody on someone's behalf. I just think it was more local than foreign. But anyway.
Yep, there's no doubt that there was a lot of Chicago-style politics that didn't require any of the Dr. No type of grand schemes. But in matter of fact, in Detroit, they actually had a facility that they nicknamed the Chicago Warehouse. So that's pretty much all you need to know about that. And so there's tons of stuff that are going on here. And then there's statutory violations. I mean, literally 15 state statutes were violated. We have evidence of that in the state of Michigan. There are 3 federal statutes that were violated. Yet when this report came out from the Michigan Senate, they didn't call for investigations into those statutory violations. They even acknowledged that some of them did occur.
Yeah, it says it all. We have the music coming up. We're going to go to the break here at the top of the hour. Patrick, hang in there. We'll resume on the other side and talk about those statutory violations. We can start with that. And to all the rest of you, please hang in until we get back shortly after the turn of the hour here.
We've all heard about antibiotics, but what about probiotics? Antibiotic means against life. Probiotic means pro-life. Antibiotics kill bacteria that are infectious and harmful to the body. They also kill the good bacteria, though, that are necessary for good health. Probiotics from Living Streams replaces the healthy balance of friendly bacteria and normalizes the digestive tract. Gastritis, ulcers, diarrheal disease is just a few of the problems people develop when the intestinal flora is out of balance. Living Streams probiotics create the healthy balance needed for good digestion, suppresses growth of pathogenic bacteria, and actually increases resistance to infection. Call the Power Hour, 877-817-9829. Order your Living Stream probiatics today. They're available in 2, 4, and 8-ounce bottles, and Living Streams probiotics comes with a money-back guarantee. Get your body back in balance with Living Streams probiotics today. 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Living Streams probiotics. Everyone should be pro-life.
As you all know, everything begins with an idea. Ideas have helped shape the very world we live in. ThePowerMall.com began as an idea, allowing entrepreneurs and small business owners like yourself the opportunity to not only survive, but thrive in an era where corporations dominate. ThePowerMall.com is a small family-owned business who has partnered with companies you've come to rely on and trust over the years, like North American Urban Spice, Miracle 2 Soaps, Vitamir, Numana Food Storage, to name just a few. Fight back against large corporations when you buy from thepowermall.com. Need to speak to a real person? Call Jay at thepowermall.com and receive superior customer service. Call 1-877-817-9829 right now. That number again is 1-877-817-9829. Support small businesses and buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.
Hi, this is Jay at the Power Mall. I thought I would discuss an item that's very valuable to my personal health and well-being. That product is called Curcumin X4000. Its potent antioxidant properties have been shown to decrease swelling and allow us to enjoy our golden years. Take control over your health today, guys. Order Curcumin by calling 877-817-9829 or order at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.